WBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Show your support for KBOO programming by picking up the special limited edition 2022 Bluegrass Marathon t-shirt. Flaunt your love of bluegrass and KBOO with this stylish royal blue and neon yellow tee. Get yours now at kboo.fm/bgshirt. That is kboo.fm/bgshirt.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the return of Portland Folk Music Society concerts with artists who tour nationally. The series continues this month on Saturday, April 16th, with guitarist Pat Donahue. Portland Folk Music Series has one show every month through June. The concerts will be at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steele Street in Portland. For information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
Hello, brothers and sisters, and welcome to this Indigenous Women's Day special. I'm your host, Jackie Malmstrom, and in this segment, we will be talking about the amazing Native women throughout history. We will be starting off with Queen Liliuokalani and her niece, Kaiulani, and the overthrow of the Hawaiian kingdom.
Our next hula is entitled Kulukulu Vai Maka o Kalahui, Mele Aloha Aina, or Sovereign's Lament. This title translates as follows: tears streaming down the face of the nation.
Nokahai kala unuku uwaloha, dolili uokala nika huwa upuni, mo I poni I ala e kahaku, mai kumukahi a hiki ile huwa.
Falsely accused of conspiring of the counter-revolution, our Queen Liliuokalani was arrested and imprisoned here at Iolani Palace. Her home across the street at Washington Place was ransacked from top to bottom, just as the palace was following the overthrow 2 years earlier. Her papers, diaries, signed petitions against annexation were confiscated.
Hai pule ho I hai lukula, mai pilivi I kale o hahe, ke la poe kole au kapiji.
In the old days, only certain individuals could handle royal belongings under penalty of death. Hence, this blatant disregard for her status was offensive and humiliating.
Mai pilivi I kale o hahe. Ika iliyo kukulani, maka
からないルナイオラに晴れ。
Lili'u was allowed to leave her scant living quarters to step out onto the upper veranda of the palace during the late night hours. It was during those quiet moments that she thought of her grieving nation and of her niece, the lovely Princess Kaiulani, Hawaii's last hope.
During this time, Liliuokalani's niece Kaiulani was sent word of the overthrow of the kingdom and traveled to America to speak with President Grover Cleveland about denying the annexation of Hawaii. The U.S. Senate did not proceed with the annexation, however, they did not restore the monarchy to power. Liliuokalani was placed on house arrest after a stash of firearms was found in the palace gardens. Although she denied any knowledge of how the guns got there, she was still placed under house arrest and forced to give up her title as Queen of Hawaii. She fought for the rights of her native people of Hawaii and will always be remembered as the last sovereign monarch of the island of Hawaii. Princess Kaiulani's health soon deteriorated, and at age 24, she passed away. In this song, Le no Kaiulani, it speaks of her grace and charm, and the expectation and love that the people of Hawaii had for their princess. In 1985, Wilma Mankiller became the first principal chief of the Cherokee Nation. She served three terms and led many community development projects. She helped establish tribally owned businesses, helped bring water to the city of Bell, Oklahoma, and also helped the tribe build a hydroelectric facility. These projects brought men and women of the tribe together to work for the common good. In 1998, President Bill Clinton awarded her with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Her book, an autobiography titled Mankiller, A Chief and Her People, became a bestseller. She was Miss Magazine's Woman of the Year in 1987. She was inducted into the Oklahoma Women's Hall of Fame and also received the Elizabeth Blackwell Award. In 1993, she was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame. In 2010, Wilma passed away at the age of 64. In 2013, a film called The Cherokee Word for Water tells the story of the Bell Waterline Project that helped launch Mankiller's political career. It was also the start of her friendship with her future husband, Charlie Soap. Here's the trailer for that movie.
It started with the return of one Cherokee woman, Wilma Mankiller.
You know anyone who could help me with a housing regulation?
Who's that guy?
Charlie Soap.
Your plan is to ask the people to dig 18 miles of water line by themselves?
But we need someone who knows the community out there.
People out here in Bell, they're not much for meetings.
How long do you plan to stick this out?
How long do you plan to stick this out?
Times when we care the most are the hardest times to get right.
Are you shutting down the project?
We've had plenty of failed projects in the past.
The greatest need here in Bell is water and housing. We have a plan that will bring a water line into Bell.
One way or another, I guarantee you that little project of theirs is gonna fail.
And something's not right.
These people here care more about politics than solving the problems of the people.
People in Bell are getting pressured for working on the water line.
Cows feel a big storm coming. They hid away from it. Buffalo, put his head down, face that storm.
Him if I have the authority to make personnel decisions on this project?
Mm-hmm.
You're fired.
Fire in a hole!
Maker, thank you for bringing us together. Thank you for giving us what we already have and for what you're putting in front of us right now.
You asking me out on a date?
Yes, Charlie, I'm asking you out on a date.
I was wondering when you'd get around to it.
Get that equipment to hell off my land!
Get over here!
It is a struggle, but we're going to make it through because you're with us.
No one from Oak Ridge has signed up to work.
You know, we sure could use your help over at Oak Ridge. Now, if we could just come together like we used to, Gadugie.
Ama, Atihini.
In 1989, Charlene Teeters was a native student at the University of Illinois. One fateful day, she decided to go to a university basketball game.
I got tickets to the game, and I tried to prepare them ahead of time of what they were going to see there. You know, they have this Indian mascot, as you know. They wear paint. Some people wear feathers. You know, they have war chants. They have, just try to go through all the things that they would experience there. So, you know, you just have to ignore that, you know, to just enjoy the game.
Illinois, baby!
When the chief came out, and I'd never seen him before, didn't know at all what he looked like, what he wore. You know, I just heard that the chief comes out and does build as an authentic dance. And he came out wearing that buckskin, really a beautiful buckskin, wearing what looked like real eagle feathers all the way to the ground. And of course the fans go into a frenzy, and all around us there were these people standing in their seats, yelling, the chief, you know. And it was, you know, my kids, you know, just sank in their seats. I saw my daughter try to become invisible. My son tried to laugh. And with me, it's a sadness that still won't leave me. But that sadness turns to anger just like that. And it still makes me really angry because I know they still do that. And I know that they're hurting other people when they do that. And I knew that I couldn't be here and not address that issue. My children know who they are. They're not confused about who they are. They know they're Indian. They have been taught to respect the person who has earned the right to wear an eagle feather headdress. What I saw in my children was a blow to their esteem, and it still makes me angry.
That was a clip from an interview with Charlene Teeters in the documentary In Whose Honor, a documentary about Native mascots and the effect on Native students at the University of Illinois. Charlene and her fellow Native students began to protest the sporting events at the school, holding signs that said, "Indians are human beings." In 1991, she became a board member of the National Coalition on Racism in Sports and the Media, holding demonstrations and marches outside numerous sports stadiums across America in an education effort on racial stereotyping. In November of 2014, she attended a rally with 5,000 other protesters to protest the Minnesota Vikings and Washington football team. She addressed the crowd with many other longtime Native mascot fighters such as Tara Huska and Winona LaDuke, and she continues her fight to this day. Coming up in April, she will be protesting the Cleveland baseball team and their logo, Chief Wahoo.
We are not stereotypes. We are not those things that they put forward, those objects. We are the human beings, because when you translate the names that we have for ourselves, they translate to mean the human beings, the real people, the original people, the first people, or simply just to our humanness in some way.
Everybody loves them some Indians. Love you some Indians. Be the Indian and not the cowboy. Throw on a war bonnet. Tell me it's fashion. Tell me how imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. Go to your local truck stop. Buy some dream catchers made from China. Hang them on your rearview mirrors of your Jeep Grand Cherokees, your Pontiacs, your Winnebagos, and as you drive down I-40, your vehicle will catch the dreams road-killed by manifest destiny. And this whole time, your radio chimes, this land is your land, this land is my land. Love you some Indians. Honor them by making them mascots. Turn them into cartoon characters. Costume yourselves in crimson paint. Use the blood off of redskin. Smear it all over. Cover every inch. You are Indian. Add big black eyes, big smile, and white, white teeth. Don't forget the fake feathers. Cover your skin. Don't tell me it doesn't come with privilege. cover it. Hide like you're ashamed of pigment, like it separates you from the norm. Tan that hide, work beneath suns, make it so scarlet it becomes purple in the shade. Add feathers, add bows and arrows. You are Indian, now dance. This stadium is your bonfire. You are Indian. Practice your tomahawk chop. You are Indian. Welcome the Braves that have a higher enlisting rate in our armed forces. Welcome the Kansas City Chiefs as they make their way to the field for the halftime spectacular. Welcome the Seminoles as a ghost of Osceola haunts the Enfields. Washington Redskins, don't change your name. Instead, hashtag Redskins Pride. Make social media our battleground. We all know that Indians don't have Twitter accounts. We still use smoke signals. Applaud the Chief Wahoo's bright white chompers as it casts you a reflection on how to love you some Indians. Go paint the town. Double coat over history, whitewash the red bricks of the reservation. Let's have Indian days in our school. Use November to teach our students the turkey dance with color construction paper, headdresses, and teepees. Now go home. Wash off the paint. Go back to your thinking that you honored your team, back to thinking that you honored the Indian. We are only costumes, back to thinking that you only find us in Western and Disney films. Go back to thinking that we only exist in history books. Go back to thinking that all of this was just fun and games. Now shake my hand and ignore how your fingers lasso around my wrist, tying us to our ancestors, yet we still survive. Now tell me how you loved you an Indian.
Winona LaDuke is founder and co-director of Honor the Earth, a national advocacy group encouraging public support and funding for Native environmental groups. With Honor the Earth, she works nationally and internationally on issues of climate change, renewable energy, sustainable development, food systems, and environmental justice. She is also the founder of the White Earth Land Recovery Project, one of the largest reservation-based nonprofit organizations in the country. LaDuke also works to protect indigenous plants and heritage foods from patenting and genetic engineering. In 1996 and in 2000, Winona LaDuke ran as vice presidential candidate with Ralph Nader on the Green Party ticket. For years, based on poor treatment by the federal government, many tribal members did not vote in national elections and paid little attention to its politics. Winona LaDuke has been trying to raise political awareness and voting rights among the people on the reservation. Throughout her career, she has worked hard for women's rights and Native rights, and in 1997, she was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame.
Sometimes I say, what would Nelson do? You know, talking about Mandela. What would Mandela do? I mean, you look at the situation of, you know, South Africa with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. You look at, the president of Liberia, the first woman president of an African country. Ellen Johnson, she said, I believe in redemption. There's two sides. One side is the apology, in which the perpetrator says, what I did was wrong, and I would like to make amends to you. That has not happened. And the other side is the offer of redemption. Because as Mandela said, is that the perpetrator also carries this weight of the crime and becomes his own victim in that dynamic of having done something egregious. And so in that guilt, the perpetrator is not healthy either. So the process of apology and redemption, or forgiveness, yeah, is a mutual healing process. I believe it takes at many levels. And, you know, I mean, the best story I know of that is today, this story, which is, you know, is not essential to your film, but the Pawnees were driven from their homeland in Nebraska. And with them, they took their sacred foods that they grew, their pumpkins and their melons and their beans and their corn. And they moved to Oklahoma, and they could not grow them. And their sacred seeds dwindled and dwindled until they had very few of some of those varieties. And then one day, a descendant of the settlers in the Pawnee homeland near Kearney, Nebraska, called the Pawnees and said, "We would like to grow your seeds. Would you let us?" And the Pawnees deliberated long because they had very few left. But they sent those seeds back to Nebraska, and the seeds flourished. And what the Pawnees told me was that the seeds remembered the land they came from. And in that, there was both an apology and a redemption. And 2 years ago, they had a Pawnee homecoming, Welcome Home Pawnee Days in Kearney, Nebraska, and 8,000 people came to welcome the Pawnees home. And so in that story, you have that corn is more than a food. It is a history. That seeds have spiritual meaning. And that corn in itself, though, needs relationship to humans. You have the loss of that sacred relationship, and the need in itself of those seeds for their land. And then you have people who make history through their redemption.
It's to harvest our decisions to revolutionize each day. Plant the seeds. Plant the seeds. Plant the seeds.
We'll be right back.
as an equal if we want to be free as a people. Then plant the seeds, plant the seeds, plant the
In 1973, the occupation of Wounded Knee by the American Indian Movement was in full swing. During the Oscars, one brave woman, Sasheen Littlefeather, was sent on stage to accept an Oscar for actor Marlon Brando, who had boycotted the ceremony and had prepared a statement for her to read about his protest of the treatment of Native Americans by the film industry.
The winner is... Marlon Brando in The Godfather.
Accepting the award for Marlon Brando in The Godfather, Miss Sasheen Littlefeather.
Hello, my name is Sasheen Littlefeather. I'm Apache, and I'm president of the National Native American Affirmative Image Committee. I'm representing Marlon Brando this evening, and he has asked me to tell you in a very long speech, which I cannot share with you presently because of time, but I will be glad to share with the press afterwards, that he very regretfully cannot accept this very generous award. And the reasons for this being are the treatment of American Indians today by the film industry, excuse me, and on television in movie reruns, and also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee. I beg at this time that I have not intruded upon this evening, and that we will, in the future, our hearts and our understandings will meet with love and generosity. Thank you on behalf of Marlon Brando.
Summer's working for a share.
Sister went missing, you know, the headlines that came out in the news and the media were, you know, Aboriginal sex trade, you know, drug addicted woman missing. And you had to really read through the story before you even, you know, knew who she was. And it was really hard to change that perception and really humanize her for the community, because there were a lot of comments like, well, she put herself in that position, you know, she shouldn't have been on the street, or where was her family, you know, how could they let her be out there doing that when they knew nothing about her, you know, they knew nothing about her story or her circumstance of why she was out there. And we worked really hard to let the community know that, you know, she was a mother of four kids. She's, you know, she's one of 10 siblings, or 12. My stepmom has three other kids. And that, you know, we love her and we miss her and, you know, we value her, and that she's not disposable, that, you know, we're waiting for her to come home, and that we're not done making memories.
Our message is clear. There is an epidemic of missing and murdered Aboriginal women in Canada. Let's look at those statistics. Over 600 Aboriginal women missing. One Aboriginal woman is 3.5 times more likely to experience violence than a non-Aboriginal woman. A young Aboriginal woman is 5 times more likely to die from violence than a non-Aboriginal woman in Canada. About the statistics. It's about the daughters, the sisters, the mothers, the grandmothers, the friends that have gone missing. It is about the broken families and the broken communities and the people that are grieving. And it is time to recognize that we need action. We need a national inquiry into missing and murdered Aboriginal women. International organizations have spoken out. Amnesty International, even the United Nations are beginning to understand and have said they understand the magnitude of this issue. But where is our federal government? Not only have they failed to recognize the magnitude of this tragedy, they have cut the programs that would help to be part of the solution. The loss of Sisters in Spirit, the cuts to the Native Women's Association of Canada, the loss of the National Aboriginal Health Organization, the loss of the Women's Health Network, the loss of the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, the loss of the First Nations Statistical Institute. We need action, and we need to find out what's going on. We need an inquiry that will look into the underlying causes of why Aboriginal women face so much violence. The debilitating impact of a residential school legacy, crushing poverty, third world living conditions on First Nations, overcrowding in housing, the lack of access to education and health care. My message to Stephen Harper is, Mr. Harper, if you're not part of the solution, you are part of the problem.
Aboriginal women make up 4.3% of the female population, yet in 2012 they accounted for 23% of murdered women.
We're seeing the same overall overrepresentation of Aboriginal victims here as we are in the rest of the country.
Jacko's niece Maisie and her friend Shannon left to go to a party.
they never came back. The grassroots has long called for a national inquiry.
In order for it to be meaningful, it would really have to be led by the people.
The Harper government has always said no.
Across Canada, people realize that this is a problem that we've got to stop sweeping under the rug.
We stand in solidarity calling for a full national public commission of inquiry into the issue of murdered and missing Indigenous women in this country.
The Prime Minister has refused a royal commission. Why not a parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Squire?
Just how many Aboriginal women are actually missing or killed in Canada?
There's something wrong in Canada if Aboriginal women have to live this fate.
It's time for us to acknowledge this crisis and for us to act.
It's long past time we address the reasons why Indigenous women are five times more likely to be killed than other women.
Almost 1,200 Aboriginal women and girls have been killed or gone missing over the past three decades.
The gruesome discovery of Tina Fontaine's body in Manitoba's Red River.
Will the Conservative government stop embarrassing Canada on the world stage and at least today agree to cooperate fully?
Beautiful. I gotta know, where did
since you've gone away. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey,
oh. Buffy St. Marie was graduating college in 1962. And hit the ground running in the early 60s, after the Beatniks and before the hippies. All alone, she toured North America's colleges, reservations, and concert halls, meeting both huge acclaim and huge misconception from audiences and record companies who expected the Pocahontas and Fringes, and instead were both entertained and educated with their initial dose of Native American reality in the first person. By age 24, Buffy St. Marie had appeared all over Europe, Canada, Australia, and Asia, receiving medals, honors, and awards, which continue to this day. During the Lyndon Johnson years, she was part of a blacklist which affected Eartha Kitt, Taj Mahal, and a host of other outspoken performers. Her name was included on White House stationery as among those whose music deserved to be suppressed. And radio airplay disappeared. In 1975, she joined the cast of Sesame Street for 5 years. She continued to appear at countless grassroots concerts, American Indian Movement events, and other activist benefits in Canada and the US. She has made 18 albums of her music, 3 of her own television specials, scored movies, garnered international acclaim, helped found Canada's Music of Aboriginal Canada Juno category, raised a son, earned a PhD in fine arts, taught digital music as adjunct professor at several colleges, and won an Academy Award, Oscar, and Golden Globe Award for the song Up Where We Belong. She continues her music career to this day and is also an outspoken activist for American Indian rights. Here is a song from her 1969 appearance on The Johnny Cash Show.
Yeah, you're great. You're great. You're so good. It's so nice to have you on the show, Buffy.
Thank you, John.
Really enjoy it. You know, I'm not all Arkansas red. In my blood, it's not all Arkansas red. I got just a little bit of Cherokee in there.
Well, that's what I hear, and I'm sure you're very proud of it, and we're very proud of you, John.
Well, thank you, Buffy. But for some reason, I feel 100% tonight. How about you and I doing a song?
Together, all right,
okay?
I think we should. Can I play along with my mouthful?
Yeah, what have you got? A mouthful.
It's a mouthful.
All right, that ought to be a real soul instrument because it comes, it's like wide open, isn't it?
It is wide open.
All right. Now I can tell you, Buster, that I ain't a fan of Custer. And the general, he don't ride well anymore. Well, to me, his score was zero, though the sum he was a hero. And the general, he don't ride well anymore.
Now, Custer's done his fighting without too much exciting. And the general, he don't ride well anymore. Well, Penny came a pumping when the men were out a hunting. And the general, he don't ride well anymore.
His men.
Well, he won't do that again.
Now, the general, he don't ride well anymore. 12,000 warriors waited.
They were unanticipated.
Because the general, he don't ride well anymore.
Now, it's not called an Indian victory, but a bloody massacre. But the general, he don't ride well anymore. There might have been more enthusiasm if us Indians had been losing, but the general, he don't ride well anymore.
General George E. Custer, all his yellow hair and luster. General, he don't ride well anymore. Well, now his gun is silent.
I
he got barbered violent.
And the general, he don't ride well anymore. Oh, the general, he don't ride well anymore.
When I was a little girl, when I was a little girl, when I was a little girl, I helped my mother with the chores. Then I would go to the river to swim. We'd play tag and swim on a swim. I loved to feel the hot summer heat. Couldn't stand shoes upon my feet. I am the youngest of 14. I am a rich girl, can't you see? My father was a farmer, hardworking. He worked all day till the evening. His hands were calloused and full of strings. He didn't speak very much English. He was a well-respected man, knew his medicines and was very grand. He took care of his family. I am a rich girl, can't you see? My mother was the kindest you could meet. Her eyes, they sparkled and her smile so sweet. She loved babies, held them to her cheek. She made everyone feel unique. She was known for her butter and cream. So throughout a community, she made sure we had extra money. I am a rich girl, can't you see? Our house, it was very old. In the winter it was so cold. Wood-filled wood stove for our heat. Bundled in blankets we would sleep. People thought that we were poor because of the holes upon our floor. But I'm a rich girl, can't you see? So much love in our family. Now I have a family of my own. I try my best to guide them as they grow. Try my best to keep them from harm. Tell them stories about the farm. When it's time to turn on the lights, I tell them I love them and good night. Then I hold my husband tight. I know everything is going right. Both my parents have passed away, but I know I'll see them someday. I am grateful for my family. I am a rich girl, can't you see? I am grateful for my family. I'm a rich girl, can't you see? So much love in our family. I'm a rich girl, can't you see?
Thank you for joining our celebration of Native Women. If you're interested in more Native American music, news, and issues, you can tune in Thursdays at 6 p.m. for Rose City Native Radio. I've been your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Thanks for listening.
Sisters, we stand and fight with a drum, a song, this brother's chains of time. This is the true reckoning, the human awakening. Together, brothers and sisters, I am no more. Brothers and sisters, I love no more. Oh, 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 sisters I know no more. Together, brothers and sisters,
The preceding program was produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. More audio can be found online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
April is Jazz Appreciation Month, and KBOO Community Radio is very proud to be the first FM station in the state of Oregon to program jazz. Let's celebrate KBOO's diverse jazz programming and the jocks who volunteer their talent to share their love of jazz music. Jazz Appreciation Month, or JAM as it's affectionately known, represents a sweet spot in the lives of KBOO's music lovers. So join us on Wednesdays, noon to 4, and Saturdays, 2 to 5, throughout the month of April, as we toast America's greatest art form.